this.
What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
I just want to see what the fuss is about.
The Sports Hub.
So I'll probably hate it.
I honestly believe that how this season plays out is not going to affect LeBron's decision on his future, because he knows what this team is. He knows that this team is in decay. He knows this team is not as good as it was a year ago when they had Kyrie Irving, and he now knows that they have the number 8 pick in the draft. That's not going to change. Whether the Cavs win 4 of their next 5 games, he knows where this team is. So I think he's trying to carry this team to the finals. It would be an incredible accomplishment, especially at this point down 2-0. But I don't think his decision is going to change. Whether they win the next 2 games or lose the next 2 games, I don't think this is going to be a championship team, and I think LeBron's known that for quite some time. It's just a matter of how it's going to end.
All right, welcome into the program. We're going to start Celtics-Cavs. We're going to pick up right where we've left off the last couple of days. Tony Maserati, Big Jim Murray alongside in our Town Fair Tire Studios. How you doing, kids?
Good, you?
Good.
Just peachy, thank you so much. We talked about this yesterday. We got, I think it was my buddy Mike in Attleboro who actually called and said, I'm so looking forward to bearing LeBron James again, that they should put up, didn't Mike say we should put up 2 banners at the Garden to show how you killed off LeBron now twice and buried him. And then, you know, we got to thinking and immediately said, but did you kill him the first time? Actually, didn't he go to Miami and start winning championships?
Yep, he won 2 in 4 years.
So I guess you can say you drove him out of Cleveland? But I think he was gone either way. He had plotted that thing with Dwayne Wade and Bosch for years. But either way, who cares about driving him out of Cleveland? Actually, don't you want him to stay in Cleveland?
Yes, that would be a better scenario because, look, you're better than them right now, let alone without Kyrie or Hayward, or it feels that way.
Well, so here's my question for you. Are they burying LeBron James here?
Maybe.
Because last time they didn't. Last time he found a better team, found a better situation, and then became, well, he hasn't missed a final since. And you haven't been to a final since.
Right.
So after that year, basically, or couple of years later, I suppose, that was it. So you didn't bury him the last time. He actually went for something better and kind of buried you. So what do you think's happening this time?
The same thing.
The same thing.
Yeah. Not entirely.
Meaning what, Murray?
If he goes to Philadelphia or if he goes to Houston, well, he's going to be on a top caliber team for the next 4 or 5 years. And he's not really going to drop off, especially with the training methods of today's older athletes.
Good, Murray. Perfect.
Please. Like, to think that, we're going to kill him again, put up a couple of banners, we did it to you. Yeah, okay, you temporarily won it, and that was great. And, you know, for a while, LeBron goes away, and then he finds a new place, and he starts winning titles again. And he's going to go to a better situation. The best thing for him to do right here, for Celtics fans, is to stay in Cleveland. But that ain't going to happen. If he goes to Philadelphia with Embiid and Simmons, and they're going to continue to build there, maybe they bring in Kawhi Leonard, how's that a win?
I mean, I said it again. Philly has their eyes on LeBron and Kawhi Leonard, and there's a way for them to swing both. If Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James go to Philly and add to that group, have you buried LeBron James?
No, of course not. No, but the only thing that's different now is the age.
Okay, so huge factor.
Right, so that's
of both you and him.
Right, so this is the thing now, is that LeBron's going to be 34 in December, and I was looking it up a second ago. Jordan retired at 34. And, you know, Garnett was basically good and, you know, elite until about 34, 35 maybe. Like, you might have been in that one, you know, they started to back off him right around that age. So, now look, there were guys who can play at 37, 38, and maybe this all goes into that story that we saw the other day, that LeBron now wants to be off the ball and instead of being the point forward that he is because he recognizes the wear and tear on him. But I think the best team in the East for the last decade has been the team with LeBron on it. Next year, that still might be true, but that might be it. Like, I think you are now pretty near the end of him being that guy. You're pretty damn close.
Does he look broken down to you? Do you think that age is catching up with him?
Yep.
I
never felt that till the other game, and he wasn't running out to the three-point line, where he had to conserve so much defensively to give you those 42 points offensively. For the first time, I said, he doesn't feel like the same guy. Even with all those points in that production, it didn't feel like the same end-to-end impact, and that's because on defense, he stopped running. So, yes, I do. So for the first time ready to answer your question, I do. I see age creeping in. I do.
I would have thought you would have learned your lesson with the Brady and Decline shows for all those years. I'm not willing to say
Needs Alex Guerrero, LeBron, clearly.
Well, he's adopted some of it.
Yeah. So I'm not willing to say that that things are going to catch up to LeBron James here in the next 3 or 4 years. Two to three. How about that? So he's going to go to a better situation. And no, you're not going to kill him. It'll feel temporarily good. Yeah, we knocked him off with this team without Kyrie, without Gordon Hayward. Neat. When he ends up with the 76ers next year, and I still think the Celtics would be better unless they add him and Kawhi Leonard. You know, it's going to be close. He ain't going anywhere. He's not going away just because he leaves the Cleveland Cavaliers again.
What's the best place for him? If you're him, where are you going?
So I was just about to say, to a team that's had young stars. So, like, look, in the short term, Houston. Like, I look at Houston and say, or if San Antonio wants to keep Kawhi Leonard and bring LeBron in there, something like that. Sure, absolutely. I mean, because I don't think Houston's going to get by Golden State, despite what happened last night. So I look at it and I say, you know, if LeBron wants instant championship here in the next 2 or 3 years, it's Houston, it's San Antonio, something like that. But if let's say he wants to play for 5 years, Philly. Philly's and again, bring in a young guy like Kawhi, because Kawhi Leonard's, what, 25? So you'd have Embiid, Kawhi Leonard, Simmons, and then, an aging LeBron. Like, that would be the right move for him, because he could still contribute to a team like that. Back off a little bit. Let the young guys take the minutes. That sort of structure is the best fit.
Do the Lakers qualify as having young talent?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. That's a good. I just think the East is better for him than the West.
Ball, Ingram, Randall. Is that qualifies? Is that in the same?
Too young. The Lakers are.
Well, they're not. They're the same ages as the Philly crew. They're just not as good.
Right.
I mean, right.
If they get Paul George too, then okay, that team's now going to be a playoff team. I don't know if that's really the best situation for
them. If the Lakers were to trade Lonzo Ball, it would be on the table for LeBron. As long as Lonzo's there, LeBron's not going there.
I mean,
in my opinion.
Philly's farther along, right?
Why is LeBron not going to LA if Ball's there?
Too much of a drama situation for LeBron.
The father and the conflicting, conflicting business interests, call it. I mean, that's what you're talking about, right?
Yes, that's correct.
LeBron's brand and the Big Baller brand and the whole thing. Like, I can totally see that. And that's so, so believable when it comes to LeBron's decision-making.
Of course.
Where he shares the same agent and marketing people with Ben Simmons, so they're, like, in business together.
And they're very good friends, too.
But they become good friends through the business and Isn't that as big of a piece for it for LeBron as anything?
Sure. Yeah, and again, I think he's probably getting a percentage of Simmons' earnings, for crying out loud. Like, at least based on my sort of outside estimation of it, that feels crooked that his agent is representing him. But all that aside, if he goes to an older team, that's not going to last. He's going to have a Cleveland situation again here in a year or two.
Okay, so, like, that's whole one piece to it. Are you really burying him? I mean, maybe you are. But you did that the last time, and you didn't bury him. He went to a better place and actually buried you for the next 5 years, whatever the case may be, longer. So he's certainly older, Maz, as you mentioned. So it's not exactly the same, but be careful what you wish for, I guess, is a little bit of it. Am I right to say that? That's point one. Point two is, how does he go out? How does he go out? Does he go out fighting? Does he go out fighting? Does he go up? You know,
in this series you're talking
about. If he's going out in this series, does he go down fighting? You know, Brian Windhorst, you told me about the story yesterday. I forgot to click on it. I didn't read it yesterday, but I read it overnight. You know, Windhorst is talking about organizational fatigue there in Cleveland, and it's very real. He said, like the Miami Heat before them, and to a certain extent, even the last generation of Cavs, it seems to be a side effect of having James, where the quest for championships combined with a lack of security over keeping James leads to some win now, pay later decisions. Also, you deal with the stress of repeated long playoff runs, endure massive media scrutiny, manage varying degrees of drama. The players get sick of one another. They get sick of the coach. The coach gets sick of the players. As a group, they lose sight of the process. It becomes something of a monotonous situation, says Windhorst. Pat Riley described this as the disease of me.
I love that term.
And not even Riley, who wrote the book on it, could stop it from happening in Miami. Then there's the issues unique to the Cavs, where the previous successful GM, David Griffin, and the owner couldn't work together. The owner and James don't trust each other. Right now they don't. The new general manager is put in a next to impossible situation. It has worn them all out, all of them, writes Windhorst. Even the new players, they've been roasted for their inconsistent or non-existent play. but they have to feel as if they've jumped on the back of a thoroughbred in the closing stretch. Everything is moving so fast and is so disorienting from what they're used to. So the team's kind of a mess, and LeBron's on the way out. How does he respond? And he's going home. Does he pack it in? Does he throttle it down and make it obvious to everyone that the team's, you know, just make sure everyone knows the team's not good enough so he gets a clean exit out, or does he fight? Does he go down fighting?
I can't imagine he leaves Cleveland a second time with his tail between his legs.
I can't imagine he goes down fighting. I've seen him do it only a couple times.
If he quits, it'll be here. It won't be in Cleveland. I just have a hard time believing he'll do it in his home, in his own arena. So look, I don't know if
he's been called out. His teammates have been called out. The national broadcasters, even their coach, to some extent, is calling them all out. Are they going to go home and just lay down?
No, but he
and
they could, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Like, they could.
Well, he's one of those that'll say, yeah, screw you. Make all the news you want. I don't care. I'm out of here.
Yeah, I go home tonight. I got three kids. I'll go see my mom.
Yeah, he would. He'd totally give everyone the finger on that one. But I just think he's from there, man. He's from there. And I
know that mattered so much the first time.
I know, but Murray, you know, then he came back. Now he's a hero again. He rehabilitated the whole thing. I think the city is prepared for him leaving this time. But is he going to leave by quitting?
He might. I don't know. I can't predict it, but neither would surprise me. If he puts up a good showing in his last games there, yep, that makes sense. But he actually throttled it down? That would make sense, too. Like, I believe anything could happen. Jimmy, do you believe something?
What's worse for LeBron, losing to in the conference finals or getting swept by the Warriors?
What is worse? I think losing the conference finals.
So do I.
If he can walk out of Cleveland saying, I was here 4 years, we went to the finals 4 straight years, I won one for you, what else do you want me to do?
Yeah, no, losing to the Celtics, especially this way.
Without Kyrie, so you're losing to a young team that's not really ready.
Yeah, but he can build a narrative there, though. So look at guys like Brown and Tatum. You know, these are some of the young guns in the league here, and hey, we're going to be competing with them for the next few years. I'm going to be competing against them here for the next few years.
He can build that narrative for sure.
Yeah, to get swept by the Warriors again, embarrassingly, I think that's actually the worst look.
See, I don't.
Me neither.
I don't. To lose to the Celtics without Kyrie or Hayward, and to lose the way they've lost the first two games.
But with Brown, Tatum, and with Coach Stevens, there you go, Jimmy. There's an easier narrative for him to build to say, hey, you know, this is a team on the come. I've been there. I've been the young star before. You know, this is who we're going to be battling against. Like, credit to them. And I think that's easier for most casual fans and most, you know, NBA talking heads to digest that and just to see them get embarrassed by Golden State again.
As opposed to what, though? Get embarrassed by the Celtics?
It's like, worse. You're supposed to get embarrassed by the Warriors.
What if this ends up going 6 or 7, though, and they end up getting, and that's how they lose?
Well, but at least then he'll have put up a fight. Like, I'm just saying, if this thing ends in 5,
oy.
Oh my God, is that embarrassing.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
And I'll say this about, I think Boston's clearly the better team, right? There's no shame in losing to a better team. But they owe themselves, if this is the end of this 4-year run together, to do it the right way. Like, stay together, fight as hard as you can. If you can turn it and win 4 or 5, go to the finals, great. And even if you can't, feel good about how you went about losing in the Eastern Conference Finals.
We got to be tougher. You know, I think they're playing tougher than we are. We see that. They're being physical. They're gooning the game up, and we got to do the same thing. So we got to be tougher mentally and physically.
The Cavs getting called out on national TV by the commentators. Going to go down. Go down. Just doing the right thing. Like, caring. And then their own coach saying, got to be tougher mentally and physically. Now they're heading home. How do they respond? And it's like, any other team, you say, well, they're going to respond. But with that Cleveland team and that LeBron factor, it's sort of like you don't quite know.
I had more faith in Milwaukee winning game 3 at home than I do in Cleveland.
Is that right?
Absolutely. Again, when the Celtics went to Milwaukee for game 3, I said, they're going to get schwacked. And they did. I felt the same way about going to Philly for game 3.
How'd that work out for you?
Well, exactly. But to me, again, that was more of a you know, an indictment on Philly than anything else.
Well, this is more of an indictment on Cleveland.
Well, so that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is if it can happen to Philly, it can happen to Cleveland. The Milwaukee game to me went exactly as I thought it would, and typically that's how game threes go. So I just say, again, these could be LeBron's last two games in Cleveland. Is he going to dog it?
Are you sure he's not? You're not. You can't be.
I just think there are so many factors there. Now, again, he didn't dog it in game two when they lost. But he himself, in games three and four in Cleveland, on his way out the door, he's going to quit?
He took a headshot in the last game. All it takes is a little one this time for him to really have a plausible out. He just takes one medium shot to the noggin. He can easily, almost legitimately claim, look, I took one the last game. I'm not messing around this time. And there you go.
I mean, there is resignation in his sort of tone, whether you go by body language or his actual sort of words. Post game two, like, I think the visuals of that, him sitting there with the hat pulled over his eyes, you know what he looked like to me? Like a guy who just lost a heavyweight fight. Like you know, a boxer who's got the hat pulled over his eyes, doesn't want you to see him. Like, that's what he looked like to me after game two.
So again, the whole team seems resigned. That Windhorst story, no matter how this conference finals plays out, it doesn't change the organizational fatigue the Cavs are fighting. It's hanging on them like a weight. Combined with their diminished talent from a season ago, it's making this playoff run feel like a trudge. All right, so your thoughts, as promised. Here's Pete in Essex. Go ahead, Pete.
So I was listening to Windhorst, and Windhorst has been, you know, ESPN's Cleveland guy. And he said Philly wasn't a fit because if you bring in LeBron, that means Embiid can't play the low post. He would have to do the role of Kevin Love and start shooting threes. And the other thing he said was, if you do put LeBron on your team and he's going to crash the paint, you need players that can shoot. And as we've seen, Simmons can't shoot, neither can Markel Fultz. So I'm not so sure that Philly is the fit. And if he stays in the East, who else? It has to be somebody with a chance to win, right? So who else is there? Is Milwaukee a fit, Mike?
No. No, but the Freak, no.
No, because the Freak and LeBron are the same player. Essentially.
Yeah, so the only reason I say Philly, look, he and Simmons are going to have a hard time coexisting because there's only one ball. But if you buy into that story that LeBron wants to play off the ball, that he's decided, I'm going to change now, I can't do this anymore, I'm older, I can't be playing 38 minutes a night and running it at both ends of the floor. So if that's the case, now look, he's not a pure shooter, but could he play on the wing? Sure. LeBron can play anywhere.
It's also, how do you feel about just, is it just pure talent in the league and you'll figure out the X's and O's later? You put three or four great players together, maybe they do.
That's what they did in Houston.
And maybe they duplicate, so as
they're
saying,
also did in Oklahoma City.
So you're saying that doesn't work?
I'm saying it's got to be the right mix.
If he is committed to playing off the ball, I think Philly's a great spot. He's really not had a guard that facilitates the way that Simmons did. He averaged over eight assists a game. Kyrie was always a shoot-first guard. Same with Mario Chalmers back in the day with Miami. Like, so that would fit as long as he wants to play off the ball. And Embiid, please. When's he ever had a big that could all, you know, clog the lane and also had that kind of offensive game?
And
Embiid
shot 214 times from three-point range this year in the regular season. He'll
figure
it out.
What does that mean?
That he can play on the perimeter. That he can play out there and he doesn't have to necessarily be on the block. And so, you know, there's different ways for them to use him, which is true, but his strength is down there, right? I think we'd all agree with that.
But he's never really had a guy like that who Ilgauskas back in the day, and that guy was kind of a hack.
But if LeBron's going to play on that kind of team, LeBron has to change because it's a young team.
Right.
It's a young team.
But at this age, I think he'd be willing to do that.
See, so that's the question.
William and Worcester, what do you got?
Hey, guys. I have, first of all, there's no way this series is going to six. If we win the first game in Cleveland, my prediction is we're just going to sweep them.
Okay, let me just stop you. Yes, if you win game three, it's over.
Yeah, they'll pack it in then. Then they will pack it in.
But even if they don't, does it matter if it's 4 or 5 or whatever?
No.
So you win game three, it's over. Like, it's just no one's ever come back from 3-0 in the history of the league. So that's, you know, not the greatest take I've ever heard. If you win game three, it's over. I would agree with that. Sean and Marble. Yes, Sean.
Hey, guys. Two thoughts. The first is LeBron going forward. He's a big guy. If you look at other guys that you were talking about, like Jordan and everyone else, they don't have nearly as big of a body. And I think LeBron's going to have to to lose 20 or 30 pounds if you
Sean,
want to keep playing.
Do you know how much weight he's lost in the last couple of years?
He's lost a lot already,
He's gotten so much trimmer.
Leaner.
So much leaner. Again, it's the method. He's doing some of the Brady stuff. So he's already done this. I mean, if you go see LeBron live, if you see him live, everyone says the same thing. Like, or, you know, especially media people, like if you get to go stand on the floor for the pregame, like I have a couple times. And anyone who's done that and just sort of turned around and watched LeBron shoot or just watch him warm up, everyone says the exact same thing. My God, what happened to him? He shredded. He used to be much bigger, much bulkier. I don't think he can lose any more weight. That's not the issue. He's 33 or 32. What is it, 32?
He's 33 going on 34. He'll be 34 in December.
Okay, so he's 33 years old, and those are like dog years because he didn't. He came into the league at 18. It's like a Garnett kind of thing.
And playing 38 minutes a night.
I mean, he plays a ton, and he plays every night. So that's an old 33. That's what it is. I don't think he can lose any more weight. Billy and Waltham. Go ahead, Billy.
Hey, how's it going, guys? So I got a quick Sox joke for Maz at the end. I want to get to the Celtics and what I think they need to do with all these trade scenarios they got on their table. So Rozier and Smart, you trade Rozier, you keep Smart, or try and keep Smart. Tatum and Brown, you keep the both of them. And as for the Kyrie Irving trade talk, it's the most asinine thing I've ever heard in my entire life. If you were to be making Team USA for the Olympics, right, and constructing that team, the only player you would take off the Celtics roster is Kyrie Irving, and it's not even close.
Okay, I'm going to have you save your Sox joke for the baseball reporters at 6 o'clock. Sox humor comes at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, no joke telling.
Although we have Sox, we're going to give you a Sox minute here coming up in a second, but the joke hour is at 6 o'clock. Thank you. It has taken root, though. You've heard more than one person mention, Kyrie, you know, do you really need him? And what could you get for Kyrie Irving?
Oh, God, please. Like, this is where it just gets preposterous. So, listen, the Celtics are a great, great story right now. As it constituted with the guys they have active, they're not good enough. They're fun, they're entertaining, and they might be the best team in what is a very watered-down East.
Could their current team be the second-best team in the league, Mass?
Yeah.
Is their current team the second-best team in the league?
Could be.
No, I think it is. I would pick this team over Houston.
Could be.
Because Houston's so stupid and poorly coached and just the way they play.
But again, the gap between one and two is enormous.
It sure is.
So, and, you know, being the second best is all great, but it doesn't get you anything. So the question is, can you get to that next spot? And in that league, more than any other, the gap between one and two is often big. Right now, look, because I just think oftentimes the finals don't even get to seven games. You know, sometimes they do. But I don't know what the history is on that, but off the top of my head,
it almost never happens, it feels like.
I mean, it feels to me like every year they get there's a clear favorite to win. Like, how many times do you go into the NBA Finals and you say, this one's a coin flip? It just doesn't feel like it happens that often to me. So the question is, how do you build a roster good enough to beat Golden State? That's what the target is right now. And you think you can do it without Kyrie Irving? You're out of your mind if you think that.
You're not talking to me.
No, I'm not talking to you. I'm saying a fan in general.
To the people at large.
If you believe you can beat Golden State as constituted, you got Murray to get you some stuff that's less potent.
Okay, so quickly, Maz, this decade, since 2011, there's been only two of the finals that have gone since 2011. Only two finals have gone seven games, Heat over Spurs.
Right.
And that was at the
game. That was the Ray Allen series.
The Ray Allen shot from the corner that saved game six, or was that seven? Either
six.
Way. And then 2 years ago when LeBron came back. Otherwise, you're 4-1, 4-2, 4-1. And I want to say this millennium, there has been, since the year 2000, there's been one, two, three, only four series that have gone seven.
Yeah, see, there's always one clear team that's the class of the league. At least that's how it feels. And in that sport, you just don't get upsets. Like it doesn't even go seven all that often.
Red Sox Minute coming away right after this.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
1-2 from Kimbrel. And a high pop to right field. That should do it. Mookie Betts creeping over. And he's got it. And the Red Sox have won it by a final score of 6-4.
All right, quick Red Sox Minute. You said that was a must-win game last night, Mass?
Well, as much as you're going to get one in the middle of the regular, you know, middle of May in a three-game series. And when I say that, I mean they haven't been playing great. Sale's on the mound. They've lost 4 out of 5 to Oakland all year. They dropped the first two games of this series, and they're looking at their first sweep of the season. They've played under 500 since 11-12. And Carson Smith throws out his shoulder. Blake Swihart wants a trade. Like, all of this is piling up. And so, to me, that was one of those games where you say, you know what, we just need to win. We just need to win to sort of slow everything down, get back on the beam, and then everyone will feel a little bit better. So, had they lost, would the season be over? Of course not. But that's one of those where you need a W to sort of get everybody focused again.
Okay, I heard Beetle mention this story earlier, so I went and read it. It's not much of a story, but it is a good headline and a good question for a talk show, I think. It's NewJersey.com. And NewJersey.com wrote, basically, or they asked, are the Red Sox cracking? Are the Red Sox cracking? And again, I'm not going to bother reading it to you because it's really not much more than that. What they say is from afar, and this is written from a Yankee perspective, but they point out that since the Sox started out 14-2, they're 500 or a game under 500 heading into last night, whatever it was.
Right, now they're back to 500 with that win, right.
Okay, so since the 17-2 start, they're only a 500 team. They're now a game behind the Yankees in the standings or a half game, whatever it is. And they look up at us and they say, huh, well, now you've got a key eighth inning reliever throwing his shoulder out because he pitched a fit in the dugout and then blamed his manager for overuse. And his manager shot back and said, shut your pie hole. You have a third catcher who they won't let catch, who's now demanding a trade. And they looked at those two things and said, huh. And to which I said, NewJersey.com, you missed out the, you know, their co-ace can't put down the video game console to the point where he's got carpal tunnel syndrome and he's being shut down from starts. So, again, they're just wondering down in New York, are the Red Sox starting to crack? Is that a fair question?
Sure. Yeah, sure it is. And the way I would phrase it, like when you say crack, does that mean it's over? No. But I think what they've reached now is this stage where the honeymoon is over.
Are they starting to crack?
Yes. The Alex Cora is now awakening to the reality of what's going to be involved in managing the Boston Red Sox. That's sort of what has happened here. So now he's seeing all the flaws and all the issues that exist in his team and that exist on many teams. But you got a beast in the division just 200 miles to the south. You have a $31 million pitcher who's a head case. Your reliever just threw out his arm by whipping his glove in the dugout and blame you for it.
Oh, my God.
You've got a third-string catcher who isn't playing and wants to be traded. And I agree with Swihart on that one, but for the purposes of the argument. So to me, it's now back to reality.
And
it's back to reality now.
You played some great sound yesterday in the baseball reporters where Cora, when part of the issue with Swihart is that Swihart needs to play, and there'll be days that Swihart wants to play in the outfield, and there'll be a spot for Swihart in the outfield. And what does Cora do? Cora says he has to go ask J.D. Martinez first.
I know this one floored me when I heard it. It did. It absolutely floored me. Because and that's it. It's just, even if you do it that way, don't tell people that you're doing it that way. Jimmy has the cut.
Go ahead.
It's tough. It's tough to do it. Whenever it comes down to him playing the outfield or DHing, I honestly run it through J.D. first.
Oh.
I said, what do you rather do? You want to DH or you want to play left? You guys know the answer. So, and it's nothing against Blake, but I think, you know, JD, he likes to play the outfield. And whenever we have the chance and we have options, we'll check with him. And if he wants to play the outfield, then Blake will DH.
Okay, so I'm sort of with you that on one hand, JD Martinez is going so well.
Don't mess with him.
Right, let him do what he wants. He's better off playing the outfield. He's going to hit like he's hitting playing the outfield. Okay, I'm going to defer to him. That's probably actually the smart, what, just so I'm going to risk cooling off J.D. Martinez's bat to get Blake Swihart at bats? No, I'm going to defer to J.D. Martinez. That's fine. But to come out and publicly say, whenever we have a chance to play Swihart, honestly, I have to go clear it with J.D. first?
Ugh, bad look.
Oh!
I would have rathered him lie.
Oh. Yeah, he should have lied.
Oh!
He should have lied.
That is a... Yeesh. No. Bad look.
I mean, and just to give you an idea, if you buy into this
even
stuff,
just the way he says it, to be honest with you, I got to go clear it with J.D.,
To me, it's almost as Red Soxian as the Carson Smith injury. Oh. Like, oh, so the inmates are still running the asylum? Like, has been like how it's been here so many times before? I got to go ask JD.
Ouch.
Who's in charge?
So, again, Are the Red Sox cracking? It's dramatic. It's a newspaper headline. It's a talk show sort of question. But I think you can sort of look at it and go, are they cracking?
I would say Alex Cora's fantasy world is cracking. Like, that's a given. And just, I want to follow up on Martinez. In left field this year, he's hit .405.
I mean,
his OPS is over 1,000. As the DH, he's hitting .275.
The fellow wants to play him left, play him in left. The way he's hitting, I ain't going to play him in left.
But don't tell us that.
And don't tell us you got to clear it with him before you play someone else.
So, like, the thing with Cora yesterday to me was the contrast. On the one hand, Carson Smith throws him under the bus. They ask Cora about it, and he says,
right.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I mean, I'll talk. We're going to talk to him. Like, just who the hell does this guy think he is? Even if he didn't throw Smith under the bus, it was, well.
No, he kind of did, though. He said he's pitched as much as anyone else or as little as anyone else. He never told us. In fact, he did tell us a day in New York. We sat him down. No, Cora went back at Smith on that.
Right, and we checked with these guys and all of that, right? So he held his ground. And then in the same breath, he says, well, when Swihart wants to play, I got to go talk to JD first. So, look, I get it. JD Martinez means more to his future than Blake Swihart does. Indisputable. So, you're probably going to bend to the star player.
You should defer to JD Martinez right now.
So, and that's fine, but don't tell us that.
Okay. And then on the Carson Smith thing, did you ever actually see the video of him throwing the glove?
I haven't. No, I said this last night. Apparently, there is video out there.
I didn't see it until they showed it to us last night on NBC Sports Boston. We have it, but I don't think we can run it. Right, Vin? We can't run it. This whole poppycock that Carson Smith said that's how I warm up, that you go ask Joe Kelly that after we're done tossing, I come and I throw my glove just like that every time, and that's actually part of my warm up. When you see the actual video of it.
Oh, I have no doubt. He wound up and whipped it, I bet.
It is such poppycock. No, it wasn't a wind up. It was a spike. It was like this. And it's in no way, shape, or form is it anything you would ever do as part of a warm up or a normal glove dispersal after a game of catch. Not even close. Like, I mean, when he's described it, I thought the same thing, Maz. He comes into the dugout, they're done with their toss, and he just sort of tosses his glove. No. It was a Gronk spike.
Wait, he whipped it.
It was a Gronk spike, but not even it was a Gronk spike.
But I'm saying with force. See, like,
it is so ass. To see the video of him do it versus what he said. Oh, what a lying sack of crap this
guy is. Of course he is. Like, as soon as he said it, he's talking about what he's doing with Kelly. You know what that is? That's this. Like you're just doing a stretching exercise. And you're holding the glove in your hand, and maybe you're doing it a little quicker just to get sort of the motion down and put some weight in your hand.
So
that's what the thing is.
So we're showing it here internally.
Yep.
You see that?
Yep, I did see it.
You think that's part of a normal? And he immediately grabs his arm like, oh no, I did it. Yet.
What a donkey. So to me, like, I look at that and say, of course it happened that way. Like, what's he going to do? Lay it out gently in frustration? And the whole idea that this is what he does when he's out in right field, that's a complete lie, too. It's him. This guy does not want to take responsibility or accountability for the fact that he just screwed his owner, his president, his manager, and his teammates. The only one who doesn't really get hurt by this is Carson Smith. Because he's getting paid either way. But the rest of them, they're all sitting there looking at him going, are you kidding me with this?
Okay, so there's your Red Sox minute. You enjoy that?
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. Sometimes they're hot on the topic.
Junta.
Magenta?
Junta.
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 Sometimes you have to wonder if there's a gas leak in the building.
Woohoo! Whoop-de-doo!
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You can ask Joe Kelly. I throw my glove every day playing catch with him. That's part of my warm-up routine is I go through my throwing motion, throw my glove. Actually, usually hold on to it. Sometimes I accidentally release it. I think it's a freak accident. I mean, I think fatigue played a factor in my shoulder, and my shoulders couldn't handle it. I think my shoulder's tired in general. Yeah, it's just from pitching. I mean, I've thrown a lot lately, and I think my arm is just tired.
I don't agree with it. On a daily basis, we talk to pitchers and how they feel, and if they don't feel they can pitch that day, we stay away from them. So it caught me by surprise, but if he felt that way, he should have told it to us. We should have mentioned it. But actually, there was a day in New York or Toronto. New York, I think, that we talk, and he said he wasn't available that day, and we stay with him.
Kind of some old school Red Sox dysfunction there.
You know what Cora wanted to say there? He wanted to say, this guy's a little bitch. That's what he wanted to say. This guy's a little bitch. He threw a little temper tantrum after giving up a home run. He came into the dugout and spiked his glove, and now he wants to blame the rest of us for pitching him too much? Bitch. That's what he is. That's what he wanted to say.
You're going to be acting like a little bitch.
Am I right, Murray, or am I right?
I don't know, 100%. There was a twinge of anger you could hear in his voice there, and rightfully so. What an idiot. And now that I've seen the video, Vinny showed it. Like, it wasn't. For him to say that, go ask Joe Kelly and watch how I, warm up with my glove. Okay, yeah, that's something different. This was a violent motion that you made like a child, a spoiled, petulant child.
If you're going to be acting like a little bitch.
And I love that he immediately was like, oh, my God, what did I just do?
He immediately, immediately grabbed it, like, oh, God. Oh, no.
What a jackass.
All right, so... there's that.
You're going to be acting like a little bitch.
Back to your phones as promised. Mike in Danvers. Hi, Mike, on the East Finals here with the Celts. Go ahead.
Yes, that and a quick Red Sox start, please. In terms of the Celtics, now you guys have been on point throughout the entire playoffs. You guys know your stuff. You've been talking about the refs and who gets picked for the games, all this stuff. Are you guys seriously think that this series is not going seven games?
I think it's entirely possible it doesn't go seven games. You think what? The league's going to make sure it goes seven?
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking about LeBron James. We're talking about the best player in the league, and we're talking about ratings. So they're going to do everything in their power to see to it this goes seven games. Now, I'm not telling you the Celtics won't win it in seven because I think they're going to win the series. But if you guys think this thing's going to be a four-game sweep, it's not going to happen. This thing's going seven games.
Well, let's see. Let's see who the refs are for game three and game four. What else you got, Mike?
And the quick Red Sox thought. I called you guys back just before. When Cora got hired, I called you guys and I said, I don't think Cora's the best pick. I think you need someone like Leland that's going to kind of step in and get things under control. You guys said, well, Cora might be good for someone like Ramirez, might help him to move along. Now, I agreed with that. The problem is he's placated to Ramirez, and now he's gone too far the other way. And basically, the inmates are running the prison. And I just, want to see if you guys had a change of thought as far as Cora goes.
I mean, I had my questions about him to begin with. I just, a first-year manager, and this spot's a really tough ask of the first-year manager. I think he's been fine. I don't think he's been perfect. Certainly, there's some things that you'll look at, and I think the game has sped up on him a couple times, and he's catered to players too much, which, every Red Sox manager has done, frankly. That frustrates us. So... I guess I would say I don't really see much of a difference in the team, though. What is really the tangible difference between this team and a John Farrell team? I mean, certain individuals are performing better, but they still suck on the bases. He hasn't done anything about the bullpen. They're hitting for more power, I guess, so maybe his approach, that's been a factor. Certainly, I guess that's better. But, I mean, you know what I mean? We're seeing, as after the honeymoon wore off, we're sort of seeing the same sort of frustrating Red Sox things that have been here for years.
So up until 2 days ago, or maybe 3 days ago, and actually maybe it's longer than that because of Price. So up until the last 10 days, 2 weeks, I thought internally they were healthier. I don't know any other way to say it.
Yeah, it wasn't a miserable place over there.
Betts feels like he's bought in again, and maybe the whole launch angle thing. Bogart's bought into the launch angle thing. I'm starting to, and certainly J.D. Martinez, Hanley was engaged early. They felt like a more cohesive team all the way around. Now, since that, the last 2 weeks, again, this is back to reality. Honeymoon's over, Alex. Here you go. These are the clowns you're dealing with.
Bob in the car on the Celts. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, real quick. Windhorst on ESPN yesterday talked about how Philly's a bad match for James because of Julian Embiid's team. And if he comes there, Embiid gets stuck on the block.
So, Bob, we just covered that. So you're the second person to mention that.
No, two other things, real quick. Don't underestimate the amount of information that that Irving brings to this team about how bad-mouthed Cleveland felt about the veterans, Horford, Banks, Brown from
Can you guys understand anything this guy's saying?
So nope, he's saying don't underestimate. The latter point was Kyrie knows what they're saying about the players on the Celtics last year. So that they were looking at Horford, looking at Brown, saying these guys get deficiencies, they're not that good, and maybe he's now relaying that to the Celtics and that's motivating them.
Okay, 11 of 15 players are different than last year's Celtics.
Correct.
Is that why they are where they are?
No.
Because of what Kyrie's telling them? Because Kyrie's telling them that they were saying bad things about you behind the scenes? Is that why they're up 2-0?
No, they have better players. I'll say this until I'm blue in the face. The big difference is Tatum and Brown. And to me, in that order, because Tatum's a rookie. He had a rookie come in and basically scored 20 points a game in the playoffs and the conference finals and Cleveland, the semis.
And Cleveland's worse personnel-wise.
Yes,
they don't have Kyrie. And that's it. So I'm sure Kyrie's telling them all sorts of stuff. Do you really think that that's what's going on here? And caller, next time you call, please put the phone to your mouth as it were a piece of pizza. Maz gave me the analogy. It's perfect. You hold the phone perpendicular to your mouth, right up against your mouth. You don't talk on it like a normal phone because then you sound like you sound. Where you're talking like this off the microphone, and it's very aggravating. Okay? So you put it to your lips in a perpendicular fashion as if it were a slice of pizza.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, back to the phones. Here's Jason and Lowell. Hi, Jason.
How you doing, guys? Like, you're eating the phone, but not quite eating.
Exactly
like,
right.
You're about to eat the phone.
Yes.
Yeah, like you're about to, but you're not going to. I get it. So before I get to the Cleveland, like the cast of players that LeBron has, I just want to say that isn't it LeBron that, you know, had these cast of players traded, like Dwayne Wade, like, you know, everything goes through LeBron.
Yes, but Jason, your phone's doing the same thing. Did LeBron want Kyrie gone?
No, I'm sure Kyrie wanted out, but what I'm saying is, with Dwayne Wade and Crowder, the cast of players, isn't this the same cast of players that came in on Paul Pierce night?
Yes, but I don't think that – but the Kyrie trade was not LeBron's call. You want to tell me getting Isaiah out of there and those guys out of there and bringing in Clarkson and those, like LeBron had more to do with that? Yes, definitely. But I think LeBron wanted Kyrie there, and he wanted to keep him under his thumb and keep treating him the way he was treating him and be able to defer to him on the floor when it was time to defer. And I think LeBron wanted the status quo, and Kyrie wanted out. And can you blame him?
No. But again, why did Kyrie want out?
Because of the shadow of LeBron.
And because LeBron's a pain in the ass.
The whole package. And not only that, maybe Kyrie knew LeBron wasn't going to stay, you know, either way. So I'm not going to be left holding the bag here. If he's going to bail, I'm bailing first.
So I had someone say to me a while back, Kyrie doesn't hate LeBron. He hates what LeBron was allowed to become. And that LeBron became this egomaniacal, just controlling force that was allowed to do whatever he wanted. And I think Kyrie looked at it, and the body's coming in and out, and LeBron's making all the calls, and then said, this guy's going to run the team into the ground, and then he's going to leave. So I'm out first.
Right. And I bet there's all sorts of little tiny things that just add up, like this whole nonsense where he picked the suits that they're wearing, and they all have to have the same bag, except he gets the alligator bag, and the rest of them get leather. And like I bet there's a zillion little examples of, like that, of team flights, team planes, team parties, team this, team that, that LeBron just is so insufferable with. And Kyrie treats, you know, is a number one overall pick himself and says, I can't do this anymore. So, like, I bet there's all of that that added up.
You get tired of LeBron being a dink.
But on the Kyrie trade here, there's been discussion recently of just how badly Danny Ainge won that thing. And I want to revisit that as well, because I think some people are missing a very key part of that whole discussion. So we'll get to that after Murray's update here. 90 seconds, no commercials.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.